beautiful. It's beautiful. Light and fluffy. And, yeah. Okay, the recorder is on. And as I was just saying, I wanted to thank everybody for coming here with our unexpected snowstorm. But as Ted said, it's very beautiful. I went out even earlier to sort of shovel out my car, and it was just light, like feathers, you know, very beautiful.
Watching it come down was just beautiful.
Just amazing. But the business about whether there are a lot of people here or not too many people here, I just remembered a story that I really liked a lot. It's in the Sawaki book that I've been working on. He talks about a rather famous master on Mount Hiei, you know, who gave a series of lectures, and a very devoted young monk, of course, attended. There was quite a crowd, but as the lectures proceeded, the crowd kept thinning and thinning and thinning, and people just didn't bother to come. Finally, he was the only person left, and the master looked at him and said, "Listen, I'm not going to talk for just one person. You get more people in here if you want me to continue this." So the next time came for the lecture, and the master arrived, and here was the same young man, and you know, a sea of empty benches. And the master said, "I told you." And the young man said, the young monk said, no, wait a minute. We have lots of people." And he started installing on these benches life-size, you know, fabric puppets. And the master said, "Those are just puppets." And the young man said, "Well, they hear no more clearly than all those who were here before. All you need is one person who actually listens."
Oh, that's good.
Which I thought was kind of nice. I thought I would talk today about another one of Dongshan's koans. As you know, he lived in the 9th century in China, and we know him in Japanese as Tozan Ryokai. I'm realizing that I'm growing very fond of him, and I keep turning up these koan stories and whatnot that are from Dongshan. We used the one about no heat or cold a couple of weeks ago. This one is in some ways similar. I think what we're beginning to see is Dongshan's personality. That was his understanding of what life and reality is. But here is the story. Dongshan said to the assembly, "It's the beginning of autumn, the end of summer, and you brethren will go, some to the east, some west. You must go where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles." He also said, "But where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles, how can you go?" Shishuang said, "Going out the gate, immediately there's grass." Dayang said, "I'd say, even not going out the gate, still the grass is boundless." It was very common in China at that time, during a sort of, I was going to say vacation period, but there was a period when monks would leave the monastery after intensive pieces of practice and travel around visiting other places, and some went home and so on during that interim. So this is what's happening here. He's bidding them farewell. They're all set to leave. I'm sure quite eager to leave. He says, "You must go where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles. Not an inch of grass. Barren. Empty. Grasses in particularly Zen thinking have come to represent the 10,000 things, all that stuff in our life, all of the delusions, all of the aspirations, the everything, all of that stuff that is constantly springing up. Because when they say the 1,000 grasses, they mean everything. And grass is a kind of interesting thing when you think about it. In the summer here, we hear our neighbor, you know, mowing his lawn. And then the next week he's mowing it again, because grass grows right back. Now, grass is natural. It's something we expect to find, and we can't get rid of it, really. So he's talking to them about their understanding that there is a place of emptiness, a place of quiescence, a place with no grasses, no complications, no tangles. And there's a kind of implication that says they were finding that at the monastery. You know, he says, you're going to go here, you're going to go there, but you must go where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles. So he's suggesting to them that they must go with a clear mind, without a grasping mind, and untroubled by the 10,000 grasses, all of those things that muck up our lives. And it sounds quite wonderful as a sort of admonition from your master. You know, go out, be balanced, understand emptiness, see no grasses, you know, just live there sort of in the absolute. And that's all very well. But Dongshan, being no fool, then adds, but where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles, how can you go? How can you actually live without all of that stuff in our mental attic? Without all those grasses and weeds that are constantly growing in our mind? And we cut them down and we discard them and we get rid of them, but they come back. And so he's suggesting on the one hand that the ideal of being where there are no obstructions is an ideal, it's a wonderful ideal. But could we actually live there? Do we actually live there? Because if nothing is happening, nothing happens. So there's a kind of conundrum here about whether we live our lives, you know, wading through the entanglement of the grasses. When I think of this, I always think of the great prairies with the grasses that were, you know, almost human height, but, you know, just forcing your way through the grasses, all of those things that obstruct yourself in your mind. Or do you go where there is none of that? And of course, he's saying, is there such a place? To some extent, the answer, I think, is obvious, but we have such yearning to mow the lawn and have it not come back, have it not impede our lives. So it's quite interesting that Shi Shuang said, going out the gate, meaning leaving the monastery, leaving this time of practice, immediately there's grass. So he's suggesting that as soon as we leave the practice, zap, you know, we're in the bushes, so to speak. People coming here, and I used to struggle with this a lot, you know, but people will say, it's so peaceful, it's wonderful, I like sitting, then I have to go out. See, and I go to my job, and there are all these problems and things. So that's essentially what Shi Shuang is saying, is when you leave the quiet place of practice, there it is. Everything is there. All the stuff. But Dayang takes it a step further, and he says, I'd say, even not going out the gate, still the grass is boundless. Mm-hmm. And I think his is a better answer to Dongshan, because that's really what Dongshan was saying. We can't travel without walking through the grass. So the issue becomes, I think, how we make our way through the 1,000 grasses. Can we clear enough space to move that isn't 10,000 miles, but it's something that we can manage or not? There is an introduction to this koan, which is number 89 in the Book of Serenity. The introduction, I think, to me, made more sense after I had read the story. It says, move and you bury your body 10,000 feet deep. Don't move and sprouts grow up right where you are. You must cast off both sides and let the middle go. Then you must buy some sandals and travel some more before you really attain realization. It, in a sense, it says stop struggling. Put on your sandals. You know, you can't move and you can't not move. We can't completely clear our minds of our delusions or our bodies of their aches and pains. But at the same token, if we stand still and try to do that, they don't go away either. So you simply, and it says, let the middle go, which I like, because usually you say, well, okay, here's, you know, moving and not moving. Somewhere in the middle there's something. He says, just let it all go, put on your sandals, and proceed. And I really like that, because it doesn't say proceed and you'll be happy. You know, proceed and there will be no grasses for 10,000 miles, or proceed and you will be in grass up to your hips. It just says, go ahead. And in a way, that's what we have to do. And it's helpful to understand that. I know when I say this, and it comes up again and again in koans, there's a kind of reaction that says, well, fine, you know, that's all very well, but I'm having problems in my life. You know, you keep suggesting there's a way to sort of move through that. And oftentimes we don't want to hear that. We really want the problems to be fixed. We want the grass to be mowed down. We want there to be 10,000 miles of easy space around us. So it's not always a message that is you're going to receive very, very well. I got a wonderful similar message from my orthopedist, of whom I'm very fond, because he's been very helpful to me, because it was so correct. As you know, I've been struggling with various things having to do with my back, and I had a telephone conversation with him. And we ended up with, I'm going to do some therapy, and would you know, come back in a month. And so we're sort of chatting about it, and I said, actually, I feel fairly fortunate because at the age of 81, I don't suffer from many of the ills of the elderly. My spine seems to be giving up, but you know, otherwise I'm in pretty good shape. I said, it's just old age. And he said, we just do the best we can. And I thought, okay. He didn't say, well, let me see what I can do about that, you know, or give up altogether. He just said, we just do the best we can. And that's, unfortunately, kind of it. And in doing the best we can, I think we walk slowly, sort of clearing our way through the grass as we go. And each step that is taken is a clear step. There's no grass underfoot. It's true, you know, it's not clear for 10,000 miles, but each step we take is a step forward. And that's very helpful. It's very helpful. It does not offer the great way out of all our problems and all of our whatever it might be. It just doesn't. But it does say, you know, put on your sandals and walk as best you can. Whether you know, you're fleet of foot or you are limping, it doesn't really matter. What I really like about this is that Dai Yang puts his finger on it by saying, even not going out the gate. We cannot promise ourselves that inside our practice, it will always be unhindered space. Because we're human. And the grasses always grow. And there's something wonderful about using that particular metaphor for all of the tangles and delusions and things in our life, because grass is very ordinary. It's everywhere. It's indefatigable. Yesterday, during the book discussion group, Kevin Schechter was talking about taking a photograph some years ago that he really loved of an asphalt driveway with one of those speed bumps, you know, going across it. And at the end of the speed bump, one little weed was coming up right through the asphalt. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't asphalt it over either. You can't decide that, you know, the way to get, I hadn't thought of that, but the way to get no grasses for 10,000 miles is to lay down a parking lot, you know, to just cover it over. Well, that doesn't work either. Maybe temporarily. And I suppose there's nothing awful about temporary relief, but if we think of that as the answer is to just cover it all up, or with astroturf, which doesn't need mowing, then it's tough. And I keep coming back to the fact that I think what these Zen teachers way back in the 9th century are saying to us is, it's sometimes called, Pema Chodron called it, the wisdom of no escape. Here we are. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, here we are. There is a way to live your life, and there are practices that give us space and understanding, but there is no way to leave the temple stepping into wondrousness. There just is not. That's not awful. It's not always what people want to hear, because it would be simpler to say that, you know, Zen teachings are, well, are a way of laying down weed killer. The trouble with weed killer is it kills. Weeds are natural. Grass is natural. So what we're trying to do is understand how to get through the sea of grass that is our life without trying to foolishly eradicate things. And it's not easy, I don't think. But I think we're being told it's possible, viable. And I think easier as time goes on. I'm guessing these were pretty young monks that he's talking to, full of ideals, and we're going to get there, and I've got it, and, you know, because we begin to understand that we do indeed just walk our way through life. And that's good for all of the tough stuff that comes with it. And we make accommodations to what comes along. And sometimes we can let it go, sometimes we can wipe it out, if you will, and then sometimes we just grit our teeth. But in any case, I think the other thing that is hidden here is these monks. It's the end of summer. They're going away. They'll be back. They're traveling away. They'll be back to the practice. They'll be back to the place where Shixuang thought it was easier. You know, they've gone out the gate, but they'll come back through it. And I think that's also kind of comforting. So it's interesting to me that Dongshan's no grass is not all that different from what do you do to escape heat and cold, which is also his story. He clearly is struggling with the conundrum of how we balance our life without being dragged about by too many comparisons with, you know, what's better than what I have kind of thing. And so it's interesting to me, too, I think, that he's one of the two founders of the Soto tradition, because in our tradition there is a practice which is said to be in itself awakening. You know, the practice is what we're doing. We are not using the practice as a tool to get something, in this case enlightenment. So it's quite makes sense to me that he and Zhaoshan Benji, who is his student, are the two founders of Soto Zen, Cao Tong, because it's suggesting that in our life itself, in our practice of our life, is enlightenment, is awakening. It's right there. We don't always see it, of course, but it's there, as opposed to we use our practice as a jump start to get something beyond ourselves. He's always coming back to, yes, I love the idea of a place with no grasses for 10,000 miles, no problems. But could I be alive without the grasses? He's always coming back to the kind of big question for all of us, is how we balance our lives without wallowing in our griefs or fleeing towards some imagined paradise. And so that's kind of what it is. That's really all I have to say today. There's not a whole lot about it, but we have a little time to chat, if you would like to.
It reminded me of when you were saying, put on your sandals and just, mm-hmm. of the conditions of today driving here. Mm-hmm. I mean, ordinarily it's smooth sailing.
Yeah.
But today we had to be extra cautious and extra slow. And, you know, so yep. When the conditions change, they're not ideal in the sense of not having that condition. But if you want to proceed, you have to do...
Sure.
You have to do it differently.
And it's interesting, I found coming here this morning, there were a few cars on the road. Every one of them was proceeding with caution. Mm-hmm. And the whole line was just, you know, going yeah. forward. Nobody was trying to speed. Nobody was swerving about in it. Because I think, you know, we live in Wisconsin, we recognize the condition, and we feel it out. But I've been on occasion, it's usually the very first snowfall we have here. You get people that either have yeah. forgotten or yeah. never knew, and suddenly they're off the road into light posts and various things because they've been driving too fast. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting kind of thing. How do you adjust, you know? And adjust ideally without any enormous complaint. Mm-hmm. Because complaining does no good. It snowed, and the snow is beautiful in this case. I mean, it could have been heavy and wet, 6 inches. Ho-ho. That would have been different. So, anybody else?
It would be nice if you could just shovel once.
Yes.
Cut the grass once.
Yes, oh yeah. Just shovel once, it would be lovely.
Uh-huh. And there's no end actually in sight.
No.
Yeah.
There no. isn't. Weeks and weeks
or
yet.
Cold. Yeah. There's no end in sight.
No. And it really requires a kind of, like last night, I Woodland Pattern had
mm-hmm.
their,
oh, yeah.
their marathon, and I read in it, but I was getting, and I thought, what kind of coat do I want to wear? There's nowhere to hang it. So if it's really cold out, but if I wear my really heavy coat, I'm going to have to sit, it's going to have to yeah. be on my lap. You know, it's yeah. like all those sort of, what kind of boots am I going to wear? Mm-hmm. How long am I going to, you know? Whereas when conditions are different,
yeah.
I just get in my car and go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I like that idea that the snow keeps falling yeah. and the cold is here. And in a way, it's easier to... for me anyway, if I don't see an end in sight, or at least not one immediately, because then you just do it. I mean, you can't
yeah, right.
do anything about it. It's like I know during Sesshin, 7-day Sesshin, for me anyway, the first couple of days were always very, very difficult because your body was just adjusting to it and the impact was terrific.
Screaming.
And whatnot. And then in kind of, you know, day 3, 4, 5 maybe, 3 and 4 anyway, you just settle in, it's just fine. The end is not in sight. Once you got to day 5.5 or 6, the end was in sight, and I began to have trouble again. In this case, usually mental, you know, just so that it has to do with that one place where you're neither beginning nor ending. Yeah. You're just there, yeah. And it's curiously much more tolerable.
It's the middle path.
It's the middle path. But it's an acceptance of that moment. You know, there's no point in getting excited on day three about when day seven will arrive. Or on January 25th about when April 1st will arrive. You know. Of course, we can have terrible blizzards in April, too. it's an interesting kind of thing. And in a way, I think I'm not proposing that we all suffer because it's good for us, but that living in this climate, or conversely in, you know, desert or high heat, where you have to work within extremes, you develop a kind of tolerance for just being where you are that is not quite the same if you have lived. I mean, an example sometimes can be if you've lived, if it's hot, and you've lived entirely 24 hours of the day in air conditioning, then you have to go out.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yep.
Yeah. But if you've not had air conditioning, or at least not all the time, suddenly, you know, you can do that. So, and of course, I always tell the story, which I suppose is probably just fantasy, because it's so long ago, and I've told it so often, but when I first moved here in 1974, the next few years were when we had, you know, 20-inch snows, and it was 26 below zero in 1977 or 78, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so here I was, and you know, where had I come? I grew up in New York State, so it was not all that different, but still. And somewhere in the middle of one of those winters, we had a January thaw. And the temperature went up to 32. And to my complete shock, I saw a guy riding a bicycle in shorts.
Yes.
And I thought, where am I? You know? But it's all relative, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all relative. So it's a, but you know, like the 10,000 grasses, the snow keeps falling, and you keep shoveling. And I don't think the requirement, however, is as a good Buddhist, you should always be cheerful about your shoveling. You should love every moment. You know, there's that kind of idea of I'm really a good. This is fine. This is no. But you keep shoveling.
But really, I mean, with climate change, no, A friend of mine was telling me about California, the drought.
Yes.
The animals are coming out of the forest.
Oh, sure.
They're coming, they have no water. So
yeah.
I think, you know, it's not just us that's having this extreme weather. I mean, it's happening everywhere,
okay.
And people aren't used to it. Mm. I mean, we're used to the conditions here in a way.
Yeah.
We're hardier. I mean, we're Wisconsinites. But a lot of people that, like, you know, that have just lived in this sort of temperate zone, it's... Extremes are not that easy for them.
No,
so
of course
we'll see
not.
Much more suffering in that sense. They will.
And I know I saw a thing on the news, and I thought about my friends in Australia. It's been so hot around Brisbane in Australia that they canceled soccer games, some, you know, like international soccer competition. I mean, people would die.
Yeah.
It was 110 or something awful. The heat in Australia has been really brutal. And you're correct that those that have no experience of it is it's much harder for them. Like, and I know it's also because it's unfamiliar.
Yes.
As well as difficult. When I went to school near Philadelphia, I was going to go to a dance with I was at Swarthmore, and I had a sort of boyfriend. Don't remember how I met him, but from Temple University in Philadelphia. He was also from upstate New York. Maybe that's how I knew him. Anyway, he was to come, you know, out to this little suburban place. We were going to go to a dance together. And he was late. Well, it had snowed a whole inch. And he got there. He said, I'm so sorry. What had happened is that he and a friend from, I want to say Vermont, had spent the entire afternoon at the intersection of, you know, Broad Street and something in downtown Philadelphia directing traffic because people were panic-stricken by the inch of snow because it was totally unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
not because they were bad people, but just they didn't know what to do. And he said, we spent our time helping them, learn how to ease forward and not skid. I laughed, but it is true. The unfamiliar is the most difficult of all. And it's frightening because we if it's familiar, you have a relationship with it at least. You like it, you dislike it, but you know where you are.
Yeah.
But when you don't know where you are, then it's very human to be terrified, I think.
I like one thing that's helpful for me in winter like this is, I think I mentioned I listened to a classical radio station from Minneapolis mm-hmm. on my computer, and it is always 5 degrees colder. And I always get 2 more inches of snow.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was very funny. I'm going to be, see if I get out because of our strange weather here. But in theory, 2 weeks from this weekend, I'm going to fly to Houston to participate in a Shuso ceremony at the Houston Zen Center, just 3 days. And so I'm looking, first I want to get a cheap ticket, but I'm also looking, you always have to go through someplace, and you wait quite a while, usually.
Yeah.
Well, I had Minneapolis or Detroit. I chose Detroit, which may be a mistake because they get fouled up very quickly. But then I thought, Minneapolis? I'm not sure. Because of the weather.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a conscious choice, thinking that maybe we can't do that.
No, I find that winter is easier for me than really hot summers, because you can always get warmer. But when it's so hot, I mean, it's one thing if you're inside air conditioning, but again, once you're out, it's hard to stay cool.
Yeah.
Whereas you can stay warm.
Yeah.
And once your furnace kicks in, it's... Mm. But
of course, I'm waiting for the next couple of days when it goes way down below. My little radiators last time got it up to 59. We'll see if this... I set the thermostat at 68, and it just runs, constantly. But I'm hoping to get at least to 50. when it gets really brutally cold, there isn't... I mean, they're pumping away, but there isn't enough heat coming out into the room to do it.
And this physical therapist that I'm working with, he and his wife live in the upstairs of a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
They have not had the heat on once this year. The person upstairs has the heat on, and enough of it rises, and they just put on sweaters, and they are completely comfortable. They have not had it on once in this extreme weather.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, I was thinking when I was kind of muttering, I came out the last time we had a cold snap, and it was 59, and I thought, just think you're in England.
Because
they think we're terrible wimps. They have very very little central heating of any kind, and it's always sort of in the 50s and dank.
Yeah.
So I put on a sweater or two, and it was just fine. All right, I think we're in pretty good shape. Why don't we turn this off? And again, thank you for coming. This has been fun.